Yeah, let me hand over to David Meline, CFO of 3M.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nigel. Okay, good afternoon. I'm David Meline, CFO at 3M. Pleased to be here again this year. What I'm going to do today for this presentation is really focus primarily on an overview of the company with a particular focus on long-term performance. Okay, so starting that, you always have to start with the six sectors of where we participate. So if you look at these six sectors and their current size and scope, obviously the biggest for us is industrial and transportation. It's about a third of the company. We have very strong positions here in many industrial sectors, and typically at the core of each of these industrial markets where we play, you find tapes, abrasives, and adhesives. Second largest sector for the company right now is healthcare. Here we service hospitals, dentists, food industry, and also pharma. Third sector for the company, consumer and office. So think about mass retail, office retail, DIY, and drugstores. This is where you'll find a number of our iconic brands and also a number of our most enduring franchises. Fourth sector of the company, safety, security, and protection, a leader in personal safety. We also have in this sector a security business, infrastructure, and commercial and residential market services. Display and graphics, leader in film technology. We have applications with that film technology, including in highway signage, advertising and brand identity, LCD displays, and architectural markets. And then finally, electro and communications with services, electrical utilities, telecom, and consumer electronics. In 2011, you would note that all six sectors generated operating margins in excess of 20%, and the company in total had a 21% operating margin. If you look at the from a geographic perspective, we have a very long history of targeting global markets. So today, almost two-thirds of our sales are outside the U.S. And basically, the focus has been and continues to be increasing our localization in these international markets. So as we evolve the business to drive more local manufacturing as well as R&D capability, we have wholly owned subsidiaries in 68 countries. We transact in nearly 200. We have 200 manufacturing sites, including 17 super hubs and over 30 labs around the world. We also have 84,000 employees, of which more than 50,000 are in the international markets. If you look at the company's growth, and if I now talk about longer-term performance, starting with sales, you can see we've grown from $16 to $30 billion over the last decade. Which is a little over 7% annual growth rate for the company. And if you look, drill down on that, on organic volume growth in that total, what you'd see is that we've averaged a little over 3%, 3.2% organic growth in the 10-year period, which compares to an industrial production index of 2.2% during that same period. So over the 10-year period, the company's grown at a 1.5 times IPI multiple on a volume basis. And if you look over the last 5 years, we've grown at 1.7 times IPI. During the period, also developing markets have increased by 15 points as a percent of our total sales. It's gone from 19 to 34% of our sales. If you look at profitability of the company, 3M has been and continues to be a leader both in terms of operating margins and returns on capital. So if you look at operating margins, we've generated operating margins in excess of 20% continuously since 2004, including during the most recent downturn in 2008 and 2009. Return on invested capital has remained above 20% continuously through the decade, and actually if you look back through multiple decades. And basically, this happens as a consequence of 3M's innovation-based business model, which we also couple with a very strong focus on operational excellence. And if you look at the capital returns, there's a very important element of flexible production capacity that we can flex over time to direct at different businesses, which makes our use and deployment of capital very efficient. Okay, so last year when I was here, there was quite some interest in. I showed a chart which talked about the different margin history in the company as between developing and developed markets. So I thought what I'd do, there was a lot of interest in that, so I thought I would drill down a little bit more today on those figures, because I think it's a fairly interesting story about the company and as it's evolving over this last 10 years. So what I've got first on the left side of the chart here is looking at the company in 2 5-year periods, so 2002 to 2006. The middle piece is the last 5 years, 07 to 11, and then the right-hand side is the 10-year period. And the 10-year is what I showed last, well, that version as of last year. And basically, what we can see in this chart, what I've done here to try to get an understanding of what's going on is we've taken out optical out of this, so we can look at the core business. We've also taken pharma out of this, which is a business we divested in 2006 and 2007. And what you can see is a couple things. One is, over the entire 10-year period, you can see in the developing markets that we had a constant operating margin of 25%. So the first 5-year period as well as the second 5-year period. And then what you can see, what was happening in the mature markets during that 10-year period, which is we drove, and we talk about this sometimes, we drove up our margins in the mature developed markets from 16 to 19%. So I think it's interesting and captures what's going on. And if you look at the 10-year average, then you can see that ex-optical and ex-pharma, there is a 7-point difference between the two, and it's a little bit of a tale of two different 5-year periods and what happened to the business. You then look at the total of the company, so this is now adding in the optical business, still ex-pharma, which we divested. So what you observe, first of all, the majority of the profitability and sales from the optical business are captured in the developing markets. So it's most substantially impacted. And what you can see here is actually a 6-point decline in developing market profitability from 31 to 25 during that 5+5 period, which is basically the phenomena of the evolution of the optical business. And likewise, you can see in the mature markets, you see the same 3-point improvement in our margins as we drove those businesses, you know, as we talk about getting towards the company average. So I think it's an interesting set of analysis which really demonstrates the consistency of our core business and the earnings capability, margin capability of the company. And if I think about the developing markets, we feel very good about the margins and the continuity on those, because we're continuously now localizing our production capability, which tends to be favorable economics for those businesses, and we continue then to drive our mature market or developed market profile towards the company average. So if I put all that together, the sales growth over the decade, the margin performance over the decade, that then translates into EPS growth, and you can see here that the company since 2002 has generated EPS growth on an annualized basis of 12%. This excludes the pharma business. If you look at it on a GAAP basis, so all in, we grew EPS at 11% over that same period. So what are the keys to this? Obviously, if you notice it all, it sits very much right here, which is it starts with innovation as the core of the business model. And George Buckley, in his 6 years as CEO, he retired now as CEO in February, did a wonderful job in terms of revitalizing innovation at 3M. The chart here, I think, correctly captures this, where you see on the bottom right there, we drove our NPVI, which is the percent of our sales from products launched in the last 5 years, went from 21% to 32% by last year. And Inga Thulin, the new CEO, has made this very much a cornerstone of his view as to how we're going to continue to evolve the business here over the coming years. What's also true is NPVI itself, which we'll continue to track as a key metric for the company, is not the whole story for us. And so we're spending a fair amount of time now as we've been able to move this thing up and get all of our businesses in a much healthier position in terms of new product innovation activity. We're now looking more carefully at again, the linkages of that development and innovation to profitability and growth. And what's quite clear is that there's an important element which we call Class 4 and Class 5, which are new products to 3M, new products and technologies, new to 3M and new to the world, which we think is a very important component of the future health of the business. And so we're looking at that, again, as part of a number of things we're considering under the new CEO. If I then turn a little bit more to the here and now, 2012, got off to a good start in the first quarter. EPS was up 7% year-on-year to $1.59 a share. That did include about 4 cents a share of restructuring, which is non-recurring. Drivers of that performance, you can see strong price performance helped our results as well as excellent productivity. And that was really across all of the business sectors here in the first quarter. We've got a situation where we're managing costs quite tightly right now, something we started really in the second half of last year as we saw the market start to slow down. We did, however, have record sales in the first quarter for the company of $7.5 billion. And if you look across the businesses, certainly most healthy was our results in our industrial and safety businesses. We continued to see weakness, as we do today, in consumer electronics, in China, in Western Europe, something you've been hearing, obviously, continuously. We're no different in that regard. We did, in February, announce our 54th year of a consecutive dividend increase with a 7% increase. And we continue to provide returns to shareholders with almost $1 billion coming back to them in the first quarter. If you look then, this is a chart we used in our December day for the analysts in New York. And basically, the first quarter results don't change our thinking on any of these sectors in terms of both geographically as well as from a business sector perspective. We see these things playing out very much as we expected. So strength in industrials, the industrial-related businesses, consumer and healthcare are steady, and electronics, as we speak, remains weak, although we are seeing some early signs of improvements, pockets of improvements, as you would expect in a turnaround. So we see early signs in the semiconductor business. What's true is we're not yet seeing broad improvement across the electronics space. And in part, a consequence of that, China remains challenging for us here in the first quarter, and we're expecting that to continue in, through mid-year. Europe, we expect to be challenging through the entire year, although obviously the comps get easier in the second half. And importantly for us, the Americas are running very well. So that would include Canada, including the U.S., including Latin America. We saw local currency growth in Latin America, I think it was 13% in the first quarter, with every sector performing in double digits with the exception of electronics at 9%. So that looked encouraging for us. If I look at capital allocation, again, this is what we shared in December. We don't have any major changes to this. We continue to track to the plan in 2012. This is updated for performance. I showed a chart like this in December. I think it's important for us. We deploy a certain amount of our capital towards acquisitions, and I think it's important for us to provide some consistent transparency in terms of how we're doing with the money we deployed and the businesses we acquired. So this update includes now there's one new acquired entity on the chart, which is a company called GPI, which is a European DIY chain that we acquired late last year. What you can see is, well, sort of for historical perspective, 3M really stepped up its activity in this area in about 2005, and what we've seen, like anything that's fairly new, is the company has been continuously improving on its performance in the area since that time. So if you look at kind of the characteristics of, and I think it's not any different than any other company, what acquisitions run well, what are the common characteristics, tend to be ones where we have a appropriately disciplined business case up front, there's a high level of leadership engagement, and we integrate in a rapid fashion. So, you know, we continue to improve. We're pleased with, these are all of the acquisitions that we've done of a board level size now since late 2010, and we're pleased with the performance of those. In terms of cash back to shareholders, we have a strong record in this regard. We've returned over $30 billion over the last decade via dividends and share repurchase, which represents 90% of the net income that the company generated over the decade. So to summarize, 3M is a very strong global leading company. Our business model is strong and always evolving. Many strengths in the company, starting with technology, both intellectual property as well as manufacturing process know-how, which is very critical to the success of the company. Very strong global presence, very strong brand position throughout the globe. We benefit from our scale very strongly, and obviously we have a very capable global workforce. And then finally, what has worked very well for the business model over time is maintaining a strong balance sheet and cash flow. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions any of you might have.
David, it's Cliff Rance.
Yeah.
Is the 90% of cash utilization to dividends and buyback the optimal solution?
Is it the optimal solution? I would say it's an outcome more than necessarily a targeted solution. So what I mean is that we view best and first use of available operating proceeds to reinvest in the business, because any I assume you'd be okay if we can find businesses that generate those kinds of returns on capital and margins to reinvest in that. At least I would any time of day. So
I would agree with you with that, but my preference would be that you have investment opportunities in your own businesses that already exist.
Sure.
I guess I hadn't looked at the number. 90, am I missing something? 90% is an extraordinarily high number.
It's a good return to shareholders, we think. Are we starving the business in terms of investment in the business? We don't think so. If we look at capital deployed to capital investment, it tends to be roughly double the average in the peer set. So we don't feel we're starving it there. If we look at R&D, for example, again, roughly double the average in the peer set. So quite honestly, I'm quite open to make changes to that if we can see opportunities and make the model work better. But, you know, we feel very good about our ability to fund, you know, business priorities while still having cash available to return.
In the last kind of 6-9 months, I guess.
Yeah, 9 months, yeah.
How's your own, you know, capital spending and hiring plans, you know, how have those changed over that time? I mean, you said that you put in some cost controls, obviously, from late last year.
Yep.
When you think about your own CapEx, say, looking at the balance of this year into next year, you know, how has that changed over time?
Yeah, good question. What I would say is that if you look at our capital plan, we've shown here $1.3 to $1.5 billion. That has really not changed. If I go back and look at the kind of the out-year plan we did a year ago before the slowdown, it really hasn't changed. And why hasn't it changed is because the capital we're deploying is really intended for capacity needs in 2013 and 14 and beyond. And we continue to have a view that the market is going to develop positively, and so we need to deploy the capital to be there when the market is there in the future. And in terms of investment, in terms of people, we are in a tighter near-term cost management mode. So we've raised the screens in terms of looking at rehiring to make sure we're very frankly more cautious, because that's a more of a near-term type requirement and event. So we've been much more cautious. We had a voluntary retirement program here in the first quarter in the U.S. Where we were very cautious about replacement, only really more on an exceptional basis, to try to make sure we're operating on the side of an environment where we think the opportunities for growth are more curtailed than we believed would be the case about a year ago.
David, over here, back here.
Yeah.
That's new slide number 7 that we walked through, the different margins by region, was real helpful, because I remember that was an issue that came up last year.
Right.
And excluding pharma makes sense, and with and without optical is very helpful. And you can see where the emerging market margins are just head and shoulders above the rest of the company. But you made a comment that I just make sure, I'm not sure I followed, but the idea is if you add more infrastructure and add more manufacturing and more overhead into the emerging markets as they develop, mm-hmm. I think that's favorable to the economics, but what does that do to the margins? And maybe you can expand on that point.
Sure. Yeah, actually what you see over time, when we look at the projects for localizing investment, in fact, they tend to be favorable to margins. So not surprisingly, when I get a sufficient level of volume so I can put in place capacity that's fully capable, which is our preference. So we tend to import until such time as we have the critical mass to do a fully capable module of capacity. But when we do and when we put that in, of course, we eliminate import duties and transportation costs. And importantly for the business model, we do a better job when we have local availability, not only responsiveness to from a timing perspective, but what happens over a relatively short period of time is the products being produced in those factories start to take on different characteristics, because the ideal model for 3M is working on a local basis, bench to bench with a local R&D team of our customers, and when they have local capacity available to them, it's a really effective model for us. So not only does it help our cost efficiency and eliminate some of those inefficiencies, but it also plays very strongly to the strength of our business model. So that's why I say, if I look at it, all indicators would say it's supportive to the expectation we can continue to generate good profitability in those markets.
And not to pin you down, but is that means they trend up, or you just, or is that
depends
you're saying sustainable?
It depends on how we plan to deploy that excess profit, right? So you've heard us talk about how we think about the business overall and a preference to redeploy excess profit towards pushing on the growth curve, and that continues to be our preference overall.
Question here. I want to go back to something Julian started to ask about. When you mentioned it seemed like you're behind on hiring is not the right word, but where would you see adding? Is this about sales footprint you haven't added yet, or what areas of the organization?
On hiring? So what are we doing? When we saw the slowdown develop last year in the second half, we started being much more cautious in terms of, frankly, the growth opportunities in the near term. And so our bias right now is when we did the plan for this year, it was more cost-focused. Managing people is an important component of that. What's happened now as we've gone through the first quarter, we're looking at selective situations where we can see the performance of the business is very good and where we can be quite clear that there's opportunities to add resources on the ground in those places. So if you take examples like healthcare in the emerging markets, we've in the last couple of months been, you know, adding feet on the street because we're getting to a critical mass in that space where we've invested as a priority over the last several years. And at some point, you start seeing this turn up because you've got sufficient critical mass in these countries and capability where when you add more resources, they can absorb them and you can see a quick return on those. So that's a theme for us in terms of people. Spaces like the safety business around the world, similar kind of situation where we can see very good growth above our plans, and you know the trends continue very favorably. So we're biased towards feeding those, you know, more openly, even in what is a more constrained cost management environment. So we're trying to be focused and targeted as we do that. Yeah, Martin.
I would like to follow up on the prior question,
sure.
Which is that in looking at the emerging market or developing market profitability,
yep.
It's a somewhat more complex equation than the one you presented. For example, the historic reason why profit margins were so robust in the emerging markets is that there was a tendency to cherry pick. But as local production is added, there's also a tendency to widen the product line, perhaps get into less profitable products, and also to the 3M thrust to develop products across the pyramid of brands and products going down the growth pyramid. Now, how are you looking at or how's the company looking at the equation of growth versus profitability in the developing markets? Go down because you're trying to push growth more? What's the current take on that?
Well, yeah, sort of at the highest level, and I know you said that's too simplistic, so I apologize for that, but if you look at the highest level, what you observe is, by and large, we're net importers in most of the emerging markets. We've been able to grow and have very good profitability, so very strong growth. We've grown a much faster pace than the rest of the company, and as demonstrated here, even with an import model, we've seen very strong profitability. So it's a virtuous cycle for us where now as we localize, as I described, there's a tendency that makes it even a stronger model for us as we localize both R&D and manufacturing. And what we have to be vigilant on is making sure that we don't bring along bad habits with that. So, you know, it's a very careful walk that we're making to that outcome. And at least if you look at this data over a 10-year period, I would say the results are quite encouraging that we're able to effectively manage that transition. On the one side, as you said, yeah, maybe you add products which, you know, may or may not have as good a profitability as the ones you're importing. But what's true is that's also a very effective way to expand your market presence and the importance to customers as you do add to that portfolio. And as long as you manage that effectively, to get the right kind of weighted average outcomes, it can be, quite a powerful positive support to growing the business on an ongoing basis. So if you look at, for example, not to devolve to examples, but if you look at localization of healthcare, which I talked about a little bit, where we've now established local production in India and China, part of the rationale there was they really do expect to have from us products which are more specifically tailored to the market requirements and don't necessarily have the same characteristics, features, technology as what might be offered in mature markets. So we've been able to now start to localize that activity, starting to produce products which are unique to that sector in those emerging markets. We're still seeing that they can generate quite acceptable profits for the company, and as I said, quite powerful, because if you think about now expanding the product offering to multiple tiers, that's not just applicable in that local market, but in fact opens up a series of interesting opportunities for us with now what's an expanded portfolio. And the truth is, engineers and scientists who come from a background of working in a developed market environment have a hard time sometimes to envision what are those right trade-offs to those product solutions. So when you get local capability
which we have in these locations. So our second largest lab globally is now in China. What it unleashes for us is actually, we think, very powerful and sustainable for the company. Terry.
Dave, you know, to the earlier discussion on shareholder return, you know, clearly 3M has returned a lot of cash to shareholders,
right,
you know, in absolute terms. I think still people, you know, look at zero net debt, you know, look at $4 billion of free cash generation in 2009. You actually put $2 billion of cash on the balance sheet in that period and wonder if, you know, the AA rating is really worth, you know, worth it in balance. And
yeah, I know.
We've got a new CEO, and I'm just wondering if there's any new consideration being given there.
Good question, yeah. So my answer is sort of starting with the CEO piece. We are taking the opportunity right now with Inga to step back, and it's a unique opportunity with the change of leadership to step back and look at, okay, what's working. Fortunately, there's a bunch of things for the company that are working quite well right now, as evidenced by some of the data I showed here today. But at the same time, now's the chance for us to step back and really examine what's worked, what hasn't worked as well as we'd like, what should we change, and that includes all aspects of the business. Should you expect that we'll come out with a fairly dramatically different view of business priorities? Probably not, okay? I mean, recall Inga's been with us for some 30-plus years and was very intimately involved with the company as you see it today. As to the balance sheet, what we do know is the model has worked quite well, strong balance sheet with a business that continues to evolve and has some level of uncertainty over time. And so on the one side, we know that works well, and if we start tweaking the model, we have to be thoughtful about doing that and unintended consequences. But at the same time, I recognize, and Inga does, our responsibility to shareholders and to challenge ourselves as to what the right answer is. So you can be assured that, you know, we take that very seriously.
Okay, and then I just had, a lot of us trying to put the pieces together, connecting the micro and the macro. Obviously, the macro in Europe and China in particular has been weaker. Can you share with us anything that you're seeing in terms of
Europe
on those markets?
Europe and China, nothing different than what we had in view a month ago on the call. And frankly, if we think about back to December when we laid out the plan for the year, unlike perhaps the last couple of years where we started seeing, you know, inflections one direction or the other, we're not seeing any changes right now that are surprising to us. So I don't have any news today on that front.
Okay, let me just squeeze one more. Sorry. Sure. You've had really good pricing in industrial businesses, 2.5% in the first part. The guidance assumes that kind of dissipates in the back half, but it's not clear to me, given the position of your products in the market, you know, why you couldn't continue to see stronger pricing.
Yeah. So industrial, you're right. We actually had, we had strong performance across the portfolio, most pronounced in industrial. Actually, what was also true last year, that was the place where we had the most cost pressure, and so they had a certain imperative to move in that regard. We guided to 0 to 1% price for the year. And, you know, as you would know, we exited the year with 2% price performance. So certainly, absent other actions, we will see that dissipate through the year. You know, where that lands, I guess it remains to be seen. I think what's also true is raw material prices are moderating as we had expected they would. So we've gotten on the other side of that curve here in the first quarter, and you know, I think that will continue here through the year, more so kind of the reverse of what we had the last six quarters prior to that, right?
David, a couple of quick ones. Going back to the margin breakout between developed and developing markets, the 1 point margin expansion for this year, is that coming pretty much equally spread between developed and developing?
That's a good question, actually. I would say a little more biased to developed, because if you look, again, you know, the charts, the well-known charts of our averages. So if you look at Western Europe, for example, where we've got some big challenges, we push the guys pretty hard on managing cost in a non-growth environment. And the good news is we're seeing that coming through already in the first quarter. So I haven't calculated it precisely in that split, but I would guess that it would be a little bit more biased towards developed.
Okay, and a follow-on to that is, if that's the case,
yeah,
and you've been localizing production more into local markets,
right,
we still have a fairly big export exposure from the U.S.
We
do. If we do see the dollar, I don't know, going from 127 down to 115, is that enough of a move to threaten your U.S. margins?
Good question. We don't see, if I look globally, yeah, that's a good question. The biggest exposures we have, the biggest net exposures we have, there are two, which are about equal. One is the net exposure with Europe, the euro, and the second is with the renminbi. So obviously the renminbi has a characteristic which is, more controlled, so I don't think I would expect to see that change in at least this gradualist change environment. Certainly the euro, a 10% weakening of the euro, and we budgeted at 133, so 10% takes you to 120. That kind of move on an annualized basis would be about 5 cents a share on an annualized basis. So, some portion of that, if that were to happen here by the half-year point. And then after that, the other currencies are fairly dispersed in terms of their characteristics. But yeah, you could see something if it were more systematic in nature and sustainable. Of course, the question then becomes what are the circumstances in the economy that lead to that, right?
Great,
off the hook. Thank you very much.